Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last year after year. Snag the hoodie that brings comfort for life. Save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20 at checkout.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week from Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review. Some great guests have been here lately. We just spoke with Nico Case about her newest record, Midnight Gray, Neon Green. We had Amy Mann, Joe Henry, and Over the Rhine. Walker Scobell, he stars as Percy Jackson in the Disney Plus series. Morgan Neville, the documentarian behind 20 Feet from Stardom. Anthony Bourdain, Roadrunner, Won't You Be My Neighbor. He's back with Breakdown 1975 on Netflix. Emmylou Harris, Lori Morgan, Ayanna Lee from Highest to Lowest. Paul Feig, the director of The Housemaid. We also talked with The Runarounds, Darcy Carden, Julian Hadfield, Lou Graham, and the cast of Fraggle Rock. That's just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's going to be a special Rewind episode, my conversations with Petula Clark and Don McLean. Petula, a British pop force who crossed the Atlantic back in the 60s, made elegance feel radical, stacking hits, stage work, and TV long before a crossover was a marketing term. Then you've got Don McLean, the New York troubadour who turned folk introspection into mass culture mythology, writing songs that still get footnotes, arguments, and plenty of think pieces all these decades later. We're going to start with my conversation with Petula Clark. This one goes back to 2017. She had just released the record Living For Today that we got to talk all about, from recording most of the album in a tiny garden studio in London and working with her longtime collaborator, Tony Hatch, on songs like Rainbow, reflecting on the nerves and respect that came reworking classics like Fever and the Beatles' Blackbird. Along the way, she also talked about what it's like to live with songs like Downtown Forever, not as a burden, but as a gift that just keeps finding new lives. All that and more. Let's get into part one of this special Rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith With Petula Clark.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, considering it's rather early for me, not too bad. I came in from Montreal last night. I've been recording back-to-back recording for a couple of weeks there. So I'm a bit sort of, as I say, I'm not a morning person. So anyway, it's lucky that this is radio, not television.
Well, it's exciting to hear that you're back to recording. But I guess what we're specifically talking about here is a re-release with new songs, right?
Well, it's a record that we made in London just a few months ago, and which was great fun to make because it was done in a tiny studio about the size of a really small kitchen, but it was absolutely perfect, technically fantastic. And it was at the bottom of the producer's garden in London, a really lovely English garden, you know, with roses and trees and birds and pussycats chasing the birds and all that stuff. But a really funky studio. And that's where we made most of this album. There are a couple more titles that we put on, which were made here in New York. Yeah, one is called The Rainbow, which I co-wrote with Tony Hatch, who incidentally wrote all those great songs for me, Downtown and Don't Sleep in the Subway, etc. And the other one's called Living for Today, which is the title of the album, which I co-wrote with my musical director.
That's a very interesting song, where you start with this great groove with the anthem of Living for Today, and then you hit that bridge. And that's where the real knowledge is dropped.
Yes. Yes. The bridge is interesting. Yes.
Now, did the song start with that idea or did it come later?
No, the song started with, you know, the night, this is a sort of cute kind of opening. Hey, I've got something to say and all that side of it. But then the bridge, I wanted to go somewhere else musically. And that's what my musical director helped me with that. And then the lyric just came. I think it was in me and I just let it go.
Well, it's a frustration many people are feeling these days.
I think so. You know, I hope it doesn't sound as if I'm preaching to people, because I'm certainly not. I mean, it's just something that I feel.
Now, the other song you mentioned, Rainbow, you wrote that with Tony Hatch. A lot of people are really interested in that collaboration. You've written together, what, so many times with huge success. I mean, what? That must be like writing with family at this point.
Well, sort of. You know, I love Tony. We don't see each other that much, but I happened to be at his house in Menorca, which is an island, a Spanish island off the coast of Barcelona, I think. Lovely, very nice. And he had a piano there, and I was fiddling around on the piano. He said, go on, write it. Whatever you're fiddling with there, just write it. And he came in and he helped me out with it. And there it is. The lyric is pretty well mine. He helped me out with the music. It's certainly an optimistic song. I think it's kind of beautiful in its own way. It's an uplifting song. And I've been singing it on stage for some time. But now we finally got it recorded.
And some of the other songs from the record, like Fever, sounds great the way you've rocked it up.
Yes. I was very hesitant about that, you know, because Peggy Lee, of course, that was her song. And I loved Peggy and we became friends. We used to sing together. And when the producer said, let's do Fever, I said, I don't think so. And he said, oh, come on, try it. And no. And I sort of went away for a day and came back and they had done the track. And they put the track on. I said, what's that? He said, it's Fever. Mm-hmm. He said, just try it, you know. So I go up to my microphone and I had a little word with Peggy. I mean, she left us some time ago, of course. And I said, hey, Peggy girl, you know, I hope you don't mind me doing this. This is yours, but I'm going to sing it for you. Okay. And we just went with it. So I don't try to sound like her. You know, nobody could sound like her anyway.
I imagine you have that relationship with a lot of songs because you knew a lot of these folks. You cover Blackbird on here and you have your history with the Beatles. Do you have to do that often? Ask for inner permission to sing it because of who wrote it?
Well, there again, it wasn't my idea. It was the producer's idea. Well, everybody asks me to do a Beatles song. You know, I mean, there's that association, you know, the British thing. And I have sung a lot of Beatles songs because they're great. But I'd never sung Blackbird. And it's something that you don't hear often. And I was a little nervous about that, too, because it's a very delicate song and I wanted to do it well. So the producer put Paul's recording on and it was lovely, of course. And then we put it into my key. Then we were sort of creeping towards me singing it. And I got in front of the microphone and I started singing it and I loved it. It's actually quite a complicated little song, but I love it. I absolutely adore it. I do it on stage and it's always a magic moment for me.
It was a really nice surprise when I heard it. And I'll parallel that into one of your songs because, Blackbird's been covered many times and your songs have been covered by so many. And when you talk about a song like Downtown that even you've redone several times and you have these songs that follow you through your entire life, like what kind of relationship do you have with a song that's just there every day, forever and ever?
Well, if it was a really naff song, you know, it was really kind of, oh, really? No, I really don't want to do this again. It would be different. But, you know, let's face it, Downtown's a great song. And, you know, it's kind of, it just goes on and on. It has a life of its own now, like so many of them. And Couldn't Live Without Your Love is being used in England for Heathrow Airport for Christmas, you know, and these songs are just, they just go on forever. And I think I'm blessed to have had them and still have them. And I still sing them, and I still sing them with great joy.
And we love hearing them. Thank you for the songs. Thank you for the conversation today.
Thank you.
Enjoy that tour.
I will.
And we'll be right back right after this. All right, welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. Now part two of this special Rewind episode. My conversation with Don McLean. We talked back in 2018 about his long, winding road to the record Botanical Gardens. It was an album shaped by patience, rejected songs, shifting record deals. He pushed back on being boxed in by songs like American Pie and Vincent. We talked a lot about his songwriting styles, as well as candidly about his politics, sincerity, legacy, and so much more. Part two of the special Rewind episode is Kyle Meredith with Don McLean.
This new record, The Botanical Gardens, it's cool. It's great to hear you doing, you know, another album. I know, you know, time passes a little bit longer these days between records, as it does for any artist, you know, who's been through decades in their career. That first single, you're kind of known for coming from the folk scene, but it feels like it's got a little bit of a blues lean to it. Is that something that, were you a big blues fan growing up too?
Well, I have a lot of different influences in what it is that I do. And I don't think that I've ever really been properly analyzed, you know, as the writer that I am and the performer that I am, because my emphasis has always been on American Pie or Vincent. And really, there's a whole lot more music going on than the styles that are in those two songs. But I put out many albums that do many different things. And there are also many different styles of songs on one record. Even this mm-hmm. latest album has many different concepts. You know, Rock and Roll Your Baby and The Lucky Guy. And those songs are kind of like old rock and roll. And then, you know, Ain't She a Honey is kind of a bluesy thing, and you know, there's country, there's and then there's, I don't know what you'd call Botanical Gardens or Total Eclipse of the Sun. Those are rock and roll, I guess. So it's just all what I do, you know, and it's kind of mixed up.
And one of those songs I'll mention, by the way, When July Comes, the melancholy feel of that, like, it's so theatrical in a way. I kind of centered in on that, and I don't know, one of those songs you kind of get under your skin and crave more and more the more you hear it.
Yes, that was an unusual song. It was built off a guitar lick. I write a lot of my songs on the guitar, as I always have, and it's an unusual one, and there are a few songs on the record that have just popped up out of nowhere and surprised me. So it was fun in that sense, writing the album. But, you know, you want to keep the quality high. And each song has got to be very good. Otherwise, you'd say, well, you know, forget that. I won't do anything. You know, I'll just wait. It took a couple of years of writing and collecting songs and rejecting others and fooling around before I was finally happy. And then the record deal was on, and then it was off. So that lost another year, almost 2 years on that. So, you know, that explains partly why the time was so long. But I have other stuff in the can now, so if they want any more, I'll have something else to follow it with.
With so many different styles, as you're talking about, you know, new ways of writing when you're going into a new record, trying not to repeat yourself, as, you know, a good artist will try to do. Does it become a challenge when you're this far in, this many songs in, this many albums in, to find that new rock to, you know, to pick up?
No, not really, because it's all, I'm kind of directed by a certain inner, you know, roadmap of some kind. And when it starts, you know, I'll say, well, okay, I'm, you know, this botanical garden idea sort of evolved, and then some other stuff happened, some tracks were made, a record sounded, then I said, let's go in the studio and we'll make it more songs with the album, with the guys in the band, fill out the album. So, you know, it went like that. And then BMG really liked the record and wanted to put it out. Big surprise, you know. I didn't do it for a record deal or anything. And so the next time around, there are a lot of thoughts. The world is quite an interesting place right now in the sense that it is so irrational. So it's challenging. I'm always thinking about some new metaphor, really, to get my head around. And once I do that, I find a way to go, another roadmap will appear and another album will probably happen.
I know, you know, a lot of artists are finding the challenge right now of writing things that are sort of reflective of what we're going through, you know, in all ways. Back in the day and throughout your career, you, for instance, you played a lot of anti-war rallies. And I was wondering, you know, does that carry over into the current politics of the day in your songwriting?
Well, no, because I think there's a lot of disingenuousness around now. And I think it was more sincere when we were dealing with our friends and buddies being killed in Vietnam, to have people in Hollywood all dressing in black as if they suddenly discovered the casting couch after 60 years, I mean, is a laugh.
Did you find yourself then facing that and asking, do I want to write that song? Do I want to write the song about that?
Well, I can't figure out what to, you know, I wouldn't, if I wanted to, I can't quite figure out what to say. You want to make sure that you write about things that really are going to last. The things that, you know, you want to say something about. For example, if you were to write a political song, a topical song, I think a more important one would be police brutality in some of these places around the country, shooting a kid 9 times with his hands up. You know, that's, if I were to write that kind of song, that'd be a more interesting topic than some of this other stuff.
Turning, I guess, to less serious matters, and there's no easy way to do that. Total Eclipse, you know, you mentioned that earlier. Is there any chance that was spurred from last year's, or just impeccable timing?
No, that's actually a true story. It happened to me in 1963, and it happened on that weekend, and I just have had that in the back of my mind for decades, and I decided to write the song.
I'm always surprised. I don't know why I'm surprised, but to hear, you know, when you hear about songs that have stuck around for that long for an artist, you know, that you didn't give up on it, that eventually that idea finally found its way out.
Well, it doesn't give up on you. That's the thing. You know, I didn't want to think about that weekend, you know, for the rest of my life, but it kept coming back in my head and remembering the whole story. And then when this album started coming together, I said, well, you know, maybe it's time to actually try to do something with that because it fits in.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Mears with Don McLean.
And with that in mind, too, Botanical Gardens, I mean, that stems from a real place, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love gardens and I love flowers and I love the woods. I mean, I live in the forest. I live in the desert out in California. So I live in somewhat isolated places. I love nature. I'm a bit of a pantheist. I don't know if you know what that word means. It means that I find God everywhere in nature and not in church. Pantheism. So that would be sort of what I am. And so I often find, you know, solace by walking in gardens in, you know, New York City or wherever. And this was in Sydney, Australia. I always go for walks in those gardens there because they're right next to the Sydney Opera House. And I usually stay there in a hotel near there. And that whole idea just developed in my head.
That's a cool song. And, you know, I actually have that.
Thank you.
Written there beside my notes, a metaphorical heaven, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, it really, a Shangri-La or a heaven or an afterlife or some kind of a dream notion of what perhaps the afterlife would be. I don't know.
No, I'm glad the way it happened. Like I said, I'm so impressed by this record. I really enjoyed listening to it all.
Thank you.
Yeah, like I said,
well,
I mean, I'll probably keep coming back to. I've got a lot of favorites on it, but that, every time, man, when July comes, I really feel like, man, I already feel like that one's a classic. Personally speaking, I'm having a good connection to that one.
So. Well, thank you very much. It's turned out very well as a record, and the song is exactly what I wanted musically. You know, it's so hard to really capture something. And what I try to do is visual. It's visual as well as, well, it's a story and it's a character development, but the visual aspect of the song is what makes the story powerful. And the visual is, of course, enhanced by the musical side of the song. It has to sing and be. What I do is often a very natural thing. It's not like it's a composed piece of music. It comes from inside me, and it's very very natural in that sense. If I ever try to sit down and write, you know, a melody to a poem or do something like that, it usually doesn't work out that well. Yeah. But if I have an idea like that, it just comes out in a dramatic way because it's the kind of thing that it is.
I mean, looking back at some of your classics, I don't think anybody's surprised in that. You know, those have always been there, and the ones that everybody's still singing to this day, the way those stories paint the picture, you know, and the music.
Well, I always surprise myself because I never know if I'm ever going to do it again. You know, I don't think anybody is so confident that they think that since they did some nice work that they're going to be able to repeat it. You know, many, many stories have happened in the biographies of artists, of people who had a nice few moments and then never did a damn thing again, you know, because they just couldn't do it. I've been lucky. I've had a pretty good run where things would come to me, and it hasn't been a complete washout, because it certainly could have been.
And I hope you don't mind me asking about one of those classics. I mean, with the movie Vincent having just premiered, I see, as usual, almost like clockwork, there's a renewed interest in people are covering that song again. Does that make its way to you every time? Do you also notice that?
Well, I'm excited, you know, by the fact that Ellie Goulding, I think, and James Blake both did these beautiful versions of the song, and the song is really out there in the wind. And then the original manuscript of the papers that I composed the song on are at the Country Music Hall of Fame right now on display, and so there's something going on with that song. These songs have a way of reappearing, and that is a particularly unique song. I did the right thing there. It really carved out a personal and I should say artistic niche of some sort that is a touchstone for people to come back to once in a while. And I mean, I have had a difficult time, you know, and it's not been made public. The struggles with music and personal struggles and getting things together and getting up off the canvas, you know, keep struggling to make, you know, with record companies to put out albums and records that they didn't want or didn't understand. And then later on they did, and, you know, all this stuff. I've never had an open road, and it takes its toll.
You know, I know music's not easy. A music career is not easy for anyone with or without hits. So, you know, that you're still pumping out, you know, the songs that you are, I think is a great testament.
Well, I feel like I have something I want to do for people. You know, that's why I've devoted my life to doing this. There's a certain humanitarian aspect to this. So much of the music business is about money and more money and, you know, bigger places and louder and, you know, Springsteen and all this stuff. And that's not why I got into this. You know, I got into this to do something beautiful. And the fact that I've been able to have a very nice career for many decades is a tremendous gift, you know.
I had sort of a silly question to tag on here at the end, and I'm going to go ahead and go for it. As I look back on a lot of the songs that you did write, do you ever wish that you would get some royalties for Killing Me Softly?
No, I don't. No, I don't want other people's royalties. I'm very... But it's been an interesting thing because that happened right around the time that "And I Love You So" was number one, with Como. "Killing Me Softly" was also going to be a number one. I think it was in the same year, and a lot of those, you know, the people like Johnny Mathis and Andy Williams and you know, the pop singers recorded both of those on the same album, which was kind of funny. I remember seeing that. But that's just a story of me. Well, one of the best things that ever came out of playing the Troubadour in Los Angeles, because I signed an agreement with Doug Weston to be able to play there twice a year for like 4 or 5 years, thinking that, you know, it would be a nice thing to do as things went along. And then all of a sudden American Pie, you know, hit, and I didn't want to be there at all, but I stayed there, you know, and every year I'd play it twice a year, you know, and it was really, really a drag. But that came out of it. Lori Lieberman came to the show and heard me sing "Empty Chairs," and then wrote this poem and went back to the two guys that wrote the song, and they incorporated her ideas into the song. And so that's how I got into this picture.
That's a really cool thing to happen, though, because one day you're just sitting there doing your job and it's got such an effect, you know, as so many of your songs have on people. But it turns out that time, you know, produces its own amazing classic that, you know, the ripple effects on these things are uncountable. You know, you can't. But we'll
and that's
them.
The reason why you don't think about immediate results, immediate reaction, immediate, you know, money, all that stuff. You don't think that way. I'm in for the long haul. And what I like to do is maybe I'll have something that gets a lot of attention, and then maybe I'll have some seeds that I'll plant and they'll pop up 10 years from now. So that's my approach.
Like I said, I'm grateful that you're doing it. I appreciate everything you've done. And
thank you.
Congrats again on this record. It's a really fine record. I'm really loving it.
Thank you very much. And I know you mean that, and it means a lot to me because I haven't heard that from anybody in quite a while. Thank you.
My thanks to Don McLean, Petula Clark, and to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around so you can get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Nat King Cole, Sheila Devine, Peter Gabriel, The Jesus and Mary Chain, Rodriguez, Simon and Garfunkel, Lone Bello, Christone, Kingfish, Ingram, Alejandro Escovedo, Jimi Hendrix, Tori Amos, The Lumineers, and my conversations with actresses Felicity Jones and Carrie Condon, and Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block. Again, weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern, that's when it starts, at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it year after year. Every American Giant piece is made in America and designed to last. No exceptions. The result is durable clothing that becomes part of your life. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life. The American Giant Classic Full Zip. Save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use Staple 20 at checkout.